weird.
Dude, you are weird.
Mr. Dale Earnhardt Jr.
That family picnic sometimes gives you more than just a potato salad.
That's the voice of my co-host and one of my best friends in the whole wide world, Mike Davis.
We're screwed.
What does that mean?
No, we're not standing in that box together in our underwear. Are you kidding me, Mike?
Oh, my God, that is hilarious.
Hey, everybody, it's Dale Jr. back again for another episode of the Dale Jr. Download. It's time for some dirty air on Tuesday, June 20th, episode 463. But you probably don't care what episode it is.
Like hell I don't.
You do?
Of course I do. Every time you say what number episode it is, I feel good about myself.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't think our listeners give
a
crap.
No, they don't care.
No.
No, unless they've been listening to every single one from the beginning, then they do care.
It seems like a small number. Seems like I've been doing this my whole life.
463?
Yeah. Seems like it should be like 12,463. Anyhow, we're just coming off of Father's Day weekend. I hope everybody enjoyed the weekend. It's a weekend off, rare weekend off in the NASCAR schedule. And, so there was no Xfinity racing, no Cup racing. And as much as we don't like that, it's good to take a little break every once in a while, and it's important. Especially, you know, it's nice when you can take a break and it's a holiday. And this is a special one, a Father's Day holiday. I've learned, you know, when I was a little boy, I got Dad a couple things. A card or something like that. I don't remember doing too much. But and I didn't think the day was that important. It just came and went. And then before I got married, again, just came and went. It was just another day. You know, people would always say, hey, man, I'm thinking about you today. I'm like,
why?
I'd have to add it up, right?
Yeah.
which is a whole other conversation. But when I got married, and especially when I had kids, you know, the day become more and more prominent. When I got married, we were, you know, sending text messages to Amy's dad, something new. This day's becoming something I can't just, can't just kind of pass through. it's got to be acknowledged, which was good. But then when I became a father, obviously, it's just gotten more and more fun every year. And as a lot of y'all might remember, you know, we documented it on or talked about it on this show. Documented might be a little bit of a strong word, but I fell short on our Mother's Day on our Mother's Day this year. I fell a little short and wasn't a total epic failure, but I didn't hit all the notes, check all the boxes. But
not bringing the mimosas to the beach was a problem.
Yeah, there was a couple things. So
you've got the beer cool.
I forgot a lot of things. Right. So anyway, I had a list in my phone. Oh. But this year's been a busy one, and I've been distracted.
Mm.
Otherwise, I mean, there's no excuse. So I had very low expectations for this Father's Day. I had, you know, Amy had every right to mail it in. But it was a good one. I wanted to give you a chance, Mike, to share what you got to do on your Father's Day. But ours, so I went to the beach. My sister and LW and Wyatt, my nephew, all came and spent a long 4 days with us. It was great.
Yeah.
I did not want it to end.
I saw y'all's pictures. They looked really fun.
Yeah. You know, I love hanging out with LW and Kelly. They're in a whole, they're, you know, as has been the case our whole lives, man, they're a couple years out there in front of me, right? So what they like to do and what I like to do has not always really been the same. So if we were to hang out 5 years ago, it was a little bit more of a distance between what entertained me and Amy and what entertained Kelly and LW. But that distance has closed quite a bit in the last couple of years, especially as my kids are starting to get older.
Her teenagers are moved off.
Yeah. And Wyatt is still young enough to engage, interact, play with the girls. He is
right.
Great.
Yeah.
With our girls, they played in the pool all day long. To be his age and racing and doing all the things that he's doing and maturing, and experiencing some pretty cool stuff, he is very good with our 2 and 5 year old daughters. They play in the pool and kid and joke around, and sweet boy. And so, but also the you know, the you know, me sitting up playing loud music all day and drinking a case of beer, you know, is not what I ended up doing this weekend, you know. And it was a, you know, it's I guess, you know, I've matured a little bit in that respect, but I still enjoy that. But it's got a time and a place, right? It's
I think you and the beer found each other this weekend, didn't you?
I drank some beer.
Yeah.
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 But I'm just saying, like, you know, no. It's not
a bender.
If I had been hanging out there with my wife and no kids, I would have drank a case of beer on Father's Day.
You're tearing it up.
A whole case. No
Damn.
Problem.
Right on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But having them around, you make adjustments and...
That's a good word for
those
it.
Those adjustments are easier to make, is my point, these days. Right?
Yeah.
Make, play to your crowd or your... And I enjoyed it, man. I mean, you know, it's not that they don't drink and hang out and have fun. We listened to music, sat by the pool, had a few drinks here and there, but it was moderated and it was really nice. And so, anyways, we went out to the beach and enjoyed, you know, finding sand dollars and, you know, we found this clam. When we're out on the beach, we find shells all the time. Clamshells, and I've never found one alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we found one, and it was probably the size of your fist. And we laid. It was low tide, so we all sit there in the water, about a foot of water, and we watched this thing walk around.
Oh wow!
It opened up and would shoot this arm out and move itself in the sand. It was cool as hell.
Yeah.
And anyways, I did the same thing. We've talked about this on the show. I brought all the shit out to the beach. All the shit.
You're that dad.
Oh, we did it even more this time. I had the bimini top up,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuck in the sand. And we had another tent sort of shade for the kids.
Oh, I was going to say must be for Kelly and LW, but no, for the kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. That's smart, actually.
Oh, man. And they did. Yeah. Everybody took, I set all this shit up, right? We got two tents and all the chairs, everything, right? Throw it all out. I get it all situated. They take off out to the sandbar because it's low tide. And we ended up spending all our time out there.
So you put it up, but nobody.
And then we're out there for an hour or whatever, and finally everybody's like, "Yeah, let's go back to the house." Okay, all right. I'll put all this.
Wait a second. What about the? Remember all the work I did on this?
Nothing. So
I
took five beers to the beach, and you're not supposed to take beer out there, but I took five beers to the beach and I drank two, and we're coming back home.
Dang, man.
I had five beers for about a good 3 hour sit.
Yeah, wow. That is an adjustment.
Yeah.
That's not a round of wedge.
No.
That's a change in the spring.
Well, you know, when you're on a non-alcoholic beach, you're not allowed to have alcohol out there. You don't take a damn case of beer out there, Mike.
A little obvious.
Yeah.
I got these
little things that slide over the beer that make it look like a Mountain Dew or a Dr. Pepper or a Coca-Cola.
Of course you do.
I got about six of those, right? And I slide them over the beers, throw them in the cooler. So you just pull them out, and they're already disguised.
They're thinking, that guy loves his soda.
Yeah.
That's a soda drinking son of a bitch right there, boy.
It's $1,000 fine, man, if you get busted with a guy.
$1,000 fine?
It's a non-alcoholic beach, son.
$1,000 fine? What
yes.
the heck?
Okay, damn, are you disguising your beers now?
Yes.
All right.
No,
get
I'm not
my-
even. Them. I mean, God, that's
you're a, not even taking them. What a wimp!
Not $1,000 fine.
Come on,
no,
son.
No, sir, no, no.
I mean, there's people out there holding Dixie cups, and I know what the hell's in that cup. I ain't gonna be sitting out there drinking water.
Right,
kiss my ass. I'm taking my beer out there.
Well, now that we've broadcast this on the old podcast, you know, $1,000 fine might. It's kind of like a pit road speeding penalty. Now that you said, you know, what you're doing.
Oh, you think I got one coming?
Maybe.
Hey. I don't know. I don't know that I'm all that recognizable out there on the beach.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean,
is it a crowded beach?
I got that same damn shade that everybody else has bought on the internet, whatever that damn blue and teal thing is.
Yeah.
I got that same. You walk out there and look on the beach, and everybody's got one of them damn things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they're nondescript.
Yeah.
Yeah, they blend
everybody
in.
Got the same one. So well, I look like everybody else out there. I'm just hanging
if
out.
If I'm smuggling goods onto the beach, I probably am going for the blue and teal thing as well. Yeah. I'm going to look like everybody else.
I like that it's a non-alcoholic beach because it kind of, because there's an alcoholic, you know, there's a beach that allows alcohol right next to us. And there's a very, it's you can see it, right?
Okay.
You can look up the shoreline and see it, and there's a bridge that connects the two islands. And that beach is slammed full.
Sure it is.
God almighty, you can't move. You ain't got no room.
Yeah.
So the non-alcoholic beach, not quite as crowded.
I believe it.
Yeah.
There's not as much regret on that beach.
But they've, you know, you and I'm, you're, you know, kidding yourself if you don't think you're ever, about 90% of the people on the non-alcoholic beach have alcohol out there.
Yeah.
Kidding yourself.
Wow, dude, that's interesting, man.
Anyway.
I think I want to say that I'm proud of you for, you know, exhibiting control and keeping it limit.
Hey, if they get me, they get me.
I ain't changing. I ain't changing. Man, by God, tried. This ship has sailed. I'm drinking my beer.
I tried, man. You know what? You know how I got it's not that the authorities aren't on to this, but they make these bags, right, that you carry. Any, you know, it's a see-through bag. It's a beach bag. You put your speaker in there, your phone, your towels, mm-hmm. all that, right? You fill that thing up. And it's a beach bag, and it sits on, you know, sits right there with all your it kind of blends right in. And in the bottom of it, though, the bottom's a cooler. So I think they make it, it's not so much like a hidden cooler, but if you don't know it's there, you'd never look and go, oh, yeah, only seeing the cooler at the bottom. The bottom of the bag unzips, and it's a cooler. And so I'm sure that, you know, the beach patrol has seen many of these things, and they know that they exist. But I think if you have that bag sitting there, and your beers are in the cooler in the bottom of this bag, right, and it's just, have y'all seen these? You know what I'm talking about? So there's, yeah, so you know what a beach bag looks like, right? And it's netted. Well, there's a zipper around the bottom, and it hinges open, and you can pack about 8 or 10 beers in there. And you throw a couple ice packs, and then you zip it up, and you'd never know that it was a cooler on the bottom of the bag. So it's kind of hidden away. But that's not enough, man. You know, if you take that bag out there and you don't have a true cooler, so you got to have a real cooler full of drinks
mm-hmm.
that are not alcoholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when the patrol, if they want to stop at your place and say, hey, man, show them what you got. Well, here's my cooler, right? And then they're so distracted by the true cooler and what might be inside it. Oh, might be some alcohol in here. They never look at the bag. They never even think about the bag being the thing that has the beer in it.
They do now.
Yeah. Well, no, they don't. They probably already know all. I don't know.
Dude,
I'd love to have somebody else in here
at your
that
age.
Smuggles beer on a beach. It's like I'm the only in this room. Come on. Who here? Raise your hand if you drug beer out on the beach. Ain't supposed to.
I got to be honest with you. I didn't know that was something not allowed. I guess I didn't see the sign that says non-alcoholic beach, or maybe I've just never gone to one.
All right.
It never occurred to me that I've smuggled drinks onto a beach that I didn't realize it was smuggling.
I want it known I got about 75% participation. There's other people in here that are also understanding the conversation we're having.
I understand what you're doing. I'm impressed. You're at your age still acting like you're underage drinking. And
that's
you're
horse.
Smuggling stuff. Do you bring your ID? Is it a fake ID too?
Okay.
Good for you.
Oh my God.
He's found his youth again. He's sneaking beers onto a beach.
It's $1,000 fine, Mike.
Dude, that's insane. No, I'm with you. I that's the
you want,
part I'm
you want to walk out there holding the f-ing case with the it's still in the box. Come on, bring it on, boys.
No, I just
come and get me.
I don't go to the beach at. Find you $1,000 to bring a beer. That's the logical explanation.
Well, it's some, you know, it's not my damn decision that that's their law. That's
it's your decision to go.
The council, I have a house on this island.
But that was your decision.
I'm not going to not buy a house because they got a law on the beach.
Somebody in this planet, maybe listening, did not buy a house because it was across from a non-alcoholic beach.
I love this house that I found of the seven that I looked at all around in this area, but I ain't buying this with a $1,000 fine. Hell with that.
I mean, all right, show up. Since we're polling the room, who thinks a $1,000 fine is enough to deter you what you would like to do? Maybe you go alternate your plan. Anybody? Oh, I swear to God, I know this freaking room already.
Would you not buy the house?
All right, so for the record, 80% actually agrees with that.
That's bullshit. I got two hands got raised. That's 20%.
Over here.
Would you buy the house or not buy the house because of a $1,000 fine for non-alcohol?
I would still buy the house.
You'd still buy the house. You just disguise your coolers, your beers.
I would still buy the house. I just, man, $1,000 if you get caught with that.
It's a deterrent. It's a good deterrent. Let me put it to you.
I don't live my life it's a crime.
In all fairness, Mike, listen.
What?
As I said earlier, the fine is working for you as a homeowner that wants to go out on the beach and have a little more space. Because the fine and the non-alcohol law deters the out-of-towners from coming there in a way, right?
For sure.
Yeah, they're like, hey, man, alcohol beach or non-alcohol beach? Which one y'all want? Well, everybody's going to go to the alcohol beach. Man, they're free to bring whatever they want, walk around, drinking their drinks.
I get that. And I also get it even more that you have kids. You don't go to specific beaches.
Yeah, and if you live on this island, you like the law because even if you do want to sneak your beer out there, it's a less populated beach, right? So that's good. That's good for people that live there and want it to be that way, right?
I get it.
Yeah,
I get it.
You got to weigh the pros and the cons, man.
You're getting upset at me because I'm impressed by you. What's up with that? Like I'm impressed by you.
I'm not feeling that emotion from you, man.
Feeling that I'm impressed?
No.
Dude, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I got to be honest with you. You know why I'm impressed? Like, I had a moment this past week where I realized I had a reminder of how old I am now. Like, it's not like you're just not young anymore. Happy. So I had this, and it's on a common activity that shouldn't be a reminder of how old. You know what it was? I kneeboarded. Big deal, right? I kneeboarded. I kneeboarded, and I kneeboarded for a while. And then the next 2 days, including even today, maybe, I'm still feeling it. Like, my body's sore. I didn't do any, like, crazy tricks. I just went to the left, went to the right, hopped over some waves, this, that, and the other.
Behind a boat,
yeah.
So,
and I'm so sore, and it's like, God dang, man, can't do it like you used to.
No, that's not true, man. That's because that is probably the only physical activity you've done in the last 2 months, and that's why you're sore. Kneeboard every day, and then you won't be sore.
What makes you think I haven't done any physical activity? What about me makes you think there's zero physical activity going on right now? Just say it, Dale. What is it? I can be active.
I'm sore when I do things like that, too. That's not a young thing.
He goes to a couple core classes, and all of a sudden, he's Mr. Exercise. Oh, look at me. There ain't nobody in here can kind of, you know, exercise like me.
I went to my first core class. I was sore for 3 days. Much like you, kneeboarding for the first time in forever.
Yeah, I mean, I was walking around. My point on this was
it's not an old. Don't put yourself in that box.
I think it is an old.
No,
thing.
No, it ain't.
I didn't exercise back then either.
How old are you? You're like 10 years younger than me.
I'm 2 years younger than you.
Two. Oh.
Yeah, and Amy is convinced that I'm actually 5 years older than you.
That's probably just because you have more gray hair than I do.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. We ought to ask her. She's like, you're not younger than Dale. And I'm like, I am. Quit insulting me.
Well.
Anyways. I'm impressed. I mean, you're still, like, you know, you're throwing down, man. Bring some beers on the beach. Mike, you risk a little fine here, a little fine there.
We weren't even going to talk about this today. The one thing I wanted to tell you that I did on Father's Day, so the beach was great. We had fun. And I'll be as excited to sneak my beer out there even after letting all this out there. But Amy, your wife tells you, hey, man, I got a plan for Father's Day or any holiday, right? And you're like, have you ever had a reaction that was like a knee-jerk reaction and not a good reaction to the plan? And then you're like, oh, I just threw that out there. Yeah. I really didn't mean. So my wife said, I got, think about this. I'm thinking that, man, she's me and her are going to do something. Kelly and LW, in my mind, aren't at this, you know, on this. I don't remember that they're coming, okay? I've forgotten that LW and Kelly and Wyatt are going to be with us on this holiday. And so Amy's like, I got a plan for Father's Day. I'm like, oh, I wonder what we're going to do. Wonder what her plan is. Can't wait. She's always something I've never done before. And she says there's a place in Charleston where we're going to have brunch, and there'll be a quartet that sings gospel. And they sing it really loud. And so you're going to have brunch while this is happening. And I was like, seriously? That's what we're doing? And this is like, I don't get a choice. And so that was my reaction, right? And she's like, hey, man, you know, that is not the best, that's not the right reaction. Like, you're going to have fun, you're going to like it. And then she goes, Kelly and LW are going to be there. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. All right, I can picture all that, all of us being together, and maybe that would be cool. But right out of the gate, I was like, damn, I wouldn't, that's not what I would have chose to do on, you know, my day. It's Father's Day, man. You know, it's your day. So
the gospel quartet's even kind of throwing me a little bit.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, all right, I'm in. I deserve this. You know.
Because of the Mother's Day.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, I need to shut up and just go on with this and
take it, and
it's probably going to be great. And so she's like, you know, it's hard to get into this thing. I got a friend that helped us get a table. And so we drive into town, get out and park right, you know, block away from this place. And it's right on the King Street or one of the busy streets down there in Charleston. We don't go into Charleston too much. We don't go into town too much. But this is kind of where we're spending our vacation for the weekend. And so we go into this restaurant, man. The people, as soon as you open the door, the quartet's right there on the right. There you are, singing. They're mid-song. And it's great. Everybody at the entrance, there's like at least four or five hostess, male and female, and they're just bubbly. Happier in hell that you came in there. Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, all of them. Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day. And just smiling ear to ear. Literally from ear to ear. And they got us we're upstairs because of, I guess, being a bigger group, I guess, we're going to go upstairs. So they take us upstairs, and the whole time, man, quartet's just going, singing a gospel song, right?
Yeah.
Something out of the hymn book. And so I wish I could remember the exact song. I remember it. I mean, when I walked in, I recognized it immediately, right? It's an
old gospel hymn.
Yeah. And so we go upstairs and we sit down, and man, the food was amazing. Our girls, you know, are piddling and being girls. And we ordered our food. We ate. And it was great. It was really, really great. Then as we were sort of winding down our brunch, the girls went down the stairs and stood on the landing of the stairs and was able to observe the singing and all of that and take that in a little bit. And then we left. And it was great. It was good. I will say, I really, this place is amazing. If you ever get a chance, I don't even remember the name of it. Oh, I think it's Hall's Chop House.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the name of it?
It's a steakhouse that they have, gets to have a brunch in it.
Yeah, I think it's a Father's Day brunch.
Is the barbershop quartet an everyday thing, or is it just, was that a Father's Day kind of anomaly type thing?
I don't think this was a Father's Day only brunch.
Okay.
And so if you ever get a chance or hear about this or whatever, I think there's a couple of these that Hall's Chop Out. It was great. I want them to know. I don't want them to think that I'm making a joke of this or saying I didn't enjoy it or whatever. It was awesome. Go, if you hear about it, get a chance to go. And for the hospitality, they were the hostess, the service, top shelf. But it was, for me and my brain, it was sensory overload.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I walked out of there, man, I felt like I had done some mental gymnastics.
I'm glad you said that. I've got something I want to tell you about it, but keep going because this is interesting.
I mean, I got out of there and went and sat in the car and just like had to take a minute, right, to get my thoughts together. Because I will say, like, I think if I go there with just Amy or go there with an adult group, the kids throw another, you know, throw another challenge into the mix, right? You're trying, you got a 2-year-old over here that's trying, wants down. I want down. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't get down. I want down. But yeah, you can't get down. I want down. I want down. I want down. You know, they want out of the chair. They want to walk around. It's busy in there, man. People bustling around, doing things.
Yeah.
Waiters and people coming out of every direction, taking plates and this and that and other. And so I think if it was if it was all adult as a group, it would have been not as difficult mentally to take in all of those processes all at once. But having the kids there, and I don't want to put it on them, but you know,
no, kids create chaos
I feel terrible just analyzing this like this. But
everybody listening knows exactly what you're talking about.
But man, it was good. I would do it again. It was different, you know. It was great. The singing was great. The atmosphere in there was positive and good experience, but different. I've never done anything like that before.
Listen, Amy's legacy, when I say her legacy, I kind of mean a little sarcastically, because when we talk about Amy, one of the things is that she got you out of your shell, right? Like, they were going way back when y'all first met. Like, she got you out of your shell. She challenged you to go do new things. And that was something that you had never had. And that to this day is still happening. And that is one of the things that I think is awesome about Amy, is that she challenges you. You would never in a million years go do the things that she has you doing.
Never.
Ever. Right. You wouldn't even think, you don't even have it in your brain to even try. Now, here's my point, though. We got into a conversation over the weekend, me and my family. My in-laws were in town for a whole week, right? And we got into this conversation about, they were asking me, do I enjoy hiking? With my wife. My wife's an avid hiker, and we, like I said, you know, we've talked about it on the show, we went to the Grand Canyon and all this other stuff. And I'm like, and then it, you know, started talking about camping and that kind of thing. And I'm like, you know what? No, I don't enjoy it. I said, you know, I would love camping if I could camp my way. You know what my way is? I don't have an itinerary. It's like, and I was thinking about you in this case. I mean, I'm looking at pictures when you take your beer on the beach. And that is the extent of your planning.
Yeah.
Your planning doesn't go beyond that. There's not brunch. There's not anything. You might not know where you're going to eat lunch or dinner that day, because that's not part of, you're at peace when you're sitting. And I'm like, if I could camp and not go to a museum, not hike a trail, not go look for seashells, not do anything but sit, listen to music, grill out, and I want to grill more food than we're going to eat, because that's part of the enjoyment. I want to grill and just, I want to be able to turn a steak or turn something and then go back to drinking a beer and not caring. But that's not how I do it. And so it then led to this point, and I think this is where I'm getting at. You know what guys want, men? I think we just want peace, especially dads. You give me a peaceful Sunday, and by peace, I mean I don't have to shuttle somebody to a soccer game, or I don't have to go do this, and I don't have to, you know, just – then we're happy. It's just peace. And listen, it's not that you don't love your kids. It doesn't mean you don't love your wife. Of course you do. Yeah. Of course you do. But the ultimate Father's Day, I got the ultimate Father's Day. You know what? My wife, we went to church on Sunday. We came home and I watched the U.S. Open all day, because my wife knew that it was like, sure day. You do what you want. We're not going to ask you to even lift a finger. And I just watched golf all day and drank a beer. And it was beautiful. And it was amazing, because it's just peaceful, right?
Yeah.
That's all I love. And I think you'd be the same way. And I think most guys are the same way.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't appreciate that restaurant brunch or that barbershop quartet. That's Amy doing the things that are amazing. If you had your way, you would have never left the beach. The bar.
Yeah. Well, I think that I'm better off having Amy I'm better off having experienced that brunch, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, I could have sat around and just, you know, moseyed on out to the beach and done nothing, but by, you know, at 8 o'clock at night, would I have been as fulfilled as I was had I? I don't think I would have changed. I don't. At the end of the day, I wouldn't have changed a thing.
Sure,
but
you feel better about yourself.
I know. Yeah. I know another. I know a little bit about what you're talking about, and one of the I was like that. You express a man. I don't want to plan. I don't want to have this date charted out to where I got to go. Okay, I can sit here in peace for an hour, but then we got to get up and do this. And then there's another block of peace maybe down, you know, in the middle of the day. And then we got those dinner plans, you know. And so it's not even the fact that it's okay. I was like this before I had kids, before I got married. I'd go on a trip with some buddies, and there was one guy in our group that would be asking you what we were doing for dinner at noon.
Mm-mm.
What are we going to do? Where are we going to eat? What are we doing for dinner?
Nope.
Where y'all want to go for dinner? I'm like, it's f-ing noon, man.
Right. Right.
Chill.
Right.
Zip it.
Right. I'm with you.
I got 5 hours that I don't want to hear nothing about a plan. I don't want to make a plan. I don't want to make a decision.
You want to say, hey, if I promise you that somewhere we'll eat,
yeah,
can you drop it? If I promise you that we'll eat.
I think that was probably the big worry. That we're just going to hydraulic all day. Not eat.
Oh, so yeah, maybe you did need to specify. I promise I do have a meal somewhere in my future.
But so I was a little bit like that back then, and I do agree. Like, part of me is like that today, not as much because I have succeeded. Like, there's the kids a priority, my wife is a priority. What they need to have an understanding of what's going to happen. My wife likes to know, okay, this is what we're going to, in her mind, she's like, I just need to know for the girls. Like, what do I need to do? If you're not going to want to go to eat lunch at this place, I've got to make a plan. And so,
and she's right.
She's right.
Yeah. 100% right.
And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. That makes sense. But I'm with you, man. There's some days where you're just like, let's just play it by ear. You know, if we feel like getting up, and golf carting to eat for lunch, we'll do it.
Yeah.
If not, we'll make, you know, we'll get on DoorDash or whatever, right? We'll just figure
in
it out.
In the moment.
I think most people, I don't know. Are you a planner or are you wired differently in, like, you're fine just sort of going with the flow?
I'm not a planner. I love going with the flow.
Everybody go
with.
I would like to say I'm go with the flow, but I'm a planner.
Go raise your hand for your planner. We've got a couple planners in here. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say, I don't speak for her, but I think Amy's a planner only if because of our girls and.
Oh, I think there's another reason. She doesn't like surprises either.
No, she doesn't.
Right.
She doesn't like surprises. And so she wants to know what's coming.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, I could go sit out there on the beach, and not and miss lunch. Hell, I'll eat it too, right? I mean, I brought a couple snacks, you know, but that ain't, you know.
I know.
We'll be sitting there, and she'd be like, "But the girls," I'm like, "Oh yeah, they're hungry too. Oh yeah, they gotta eat." I'm an
That's so true, dude.
I'm still learning. Yeah. I'm still learning. There's other people that live
You're
here.
You're responsible for them. Remember?
There's other people that live in my house.
You're the dad.
Our house. Our
it's
house.
Called Father's
it's
Day,
not
Men's
house.
Day.
Yeah, it's not my house. It's our house.
Oh, well. Good times, man.
Yeah.
Good times. I'm glad you
guys had
fun.
I love these conversations, man, because it makes me feel a little bit more normal, because I feel like sometimes I'm on this island with the way I think.
Hey, Nashville, the Dale Jr. Download is coming your way this week for a live show presented by Ally. It's this Friday night at the Old Red on Broadway, 8:30 p.m. start. We cannot wait. Of course, there's going to be other things before and after our show. Russell Dickerson, the country singer, will be performing. The venue fills up really early, so get there, enjoy a beer, enjoy Russell Dickerson, and then we'll be on. We're looking forward to it, and thank you, Ally, for inviting us. We will see you Friday night. Hey, Dale Jr. Downloaders, are you planning to go to Atlanta Motor Speedway on July 8th and 9th? Well, you should. Listen, this time it's going to be under the lights. It's a new way to experience the high-speed close quarters racing that we've come to expect from the new Atlanta. Seeing the sparks fly and lights reflecting off the roaring pack in Atlanta's night race. And there's a lot more to enjoy at Atlanta's summer NASCAR event. AMS is kicking off the week on the 4th of July with a free, I said free, massive fireworks show presented by Freight Auctions. You heard that right. It's a huge Independence Day celebration. And did I mention it's free? It's a free way for fans to kick off the race week. It is perfect. That's just the start of a week full of entertainment. There's grassroots legends racing on Atlanta's Quarter Mile Thunder Ring. There's track driving opportunities that benefit Speedway Children's Charities. There's Revs and Riffs, which adds a weekend of concerts by Andy Grammer, Lone Star, and more to the weekend racing action. You just don't want to miss it. Tickets and camping for Atlanta's night races are available right now at www.atlantamotorspeedway.com. That again is www.atlantamotorspeedway.com.
Anyway, man, we gotta talk about the Incredible Cars Tour race that happened at Dominion. I don't know that. So if you haven't seen it, you can go to Flow and catch a replay or some highlights. But the battle for the win was a bit viral on social media Saturday night and Sunday. Butterbean McQueen, one of your favorites, Mike,
yep.
Number 03 in the Cars Tour. Quite a character, quite a personality. Pretty much had, you know, led most of the race and controlled the race for the most part, and had the best car. He was going to win the race. A couple cautions happened late. It gave Carson Quapple, who was running second, third. Bobby McCarty's also up in the top three throughout the race. But Carson gets on the outside for a restart and beats Butterbean McQueen, or almost beats him, but holds really strong on the outside, has a great restart. And then another yellow presents another opportunity for Carson, and he passes Butterbean on the outside clean, right? And then Butterbean having the best car, and he's a really talented driver. He gets back to Carson with about 9 or 8 laps to go, gets underneath him, and when he gets underneath him, the way I understand the etiquette in short track racing is, you know, it's okay to lean on each other a little bit, and Butterbean did that in the first turn. And then he did it again in the next turn. And then, I mean, it's like 3 or 4 turns in a row. He just drives up and slides into the side of Carson over and over, right? And the last turn that they made contact really disrupted the speed in both cars. And Bobby McCarty comes from behind and goes 3 wide to the inside off of turn 2 down the back straightaway. And 3 wide at Dominion, it's a little bit narrow. All of that really squeezed Carson into the outside wall. There's a lot of contact between Butterbean and Carson, and Carson gets the worst end of this deal, right? he was racing really hard on the outside. Maybe had a chance to hold off Butterbean, but if he didn't, he's going to run probably second. But anyways, he gets damaged. Folds nose in under the tire and ends up falling back to 4th or 5th. Bobby passes them both and wins the race side by side across the line by about 2 feet. It's a fantastic finish.
That sounds like it.
It was a very I knew I would be in this situation, and I'll be in this situation again, a very uncomfortable one at that, where I owned some of the series.
Yeah.
I'm an investor in the series and also own a car that competes out there, a car that competes really well. And so I thought, for me, Carson did a really, really good job. I was impressed by how he ran on the outside and how committed he was. The 03 has Butterbean Queen has beaten him this whole race. And so a lot of times when you have a late restart, that plays into your mind a little bit. You're on the outside, and you're like, well, this guy's got the best car. I don't know how much of a shot I got. And a lot of guys are already beaten before they get that green flag for the final restart. Carson, though, man, he acted and raced like he had every chance in the world to win that race. And he actually got around Butterbean and takes the lead cleanly. I felt like that was some of the most impressive driving that I had seen from Carson in the short career that he's been running for us.
That's saying something.
I was very impressed by that.
Sure.
And so while he didn't get a great result, I saw some things. I saw him do some things that I thought, that's what you want to see from a driver who you feel like could make it, right? Who has the tools to get there, right? You want to see him be presented with an opportunity late, even though he knows he's not got the best car, and give it more than his all to get the lead and control of the race. He did that. Butterbean is a great personality. Again, he's an asset to the Cars Tour. He brings a good following that he's growing. He works and engages well with fans and kids at the racetrack. He's got a well-respected, I mean, that's an understatement, in Lee Pulliam for his car owner. Lee is considered one of the greatest late model stock racers of in history, if you will. I can't say enough about how much I respect Lee and what he does and how much he means to the tour. Having him, he has a couple cars that competes out there, and he's got a great little driver in Butterbean. And so they're going to be battling Carson for this championship, and it's going to go down to the wire more than likely. And there'll be more run-ins between them. I was just a little bit disappointed that when a guy passes you cleanly on the outside and takes the lead, you give him a little bit more respect when you're trying to get back by him. Butterbean ran into the door of the 8 car, Carson, 3 corners in a row before Bobby goes by. And, every corner, they didn't go through a corner without making contact. And, you know, I was like, damn, man, you know, come on. You know, he passed you clean on the outside. Try not to, you know, drive him up the racetrack and just, you know, trying to be so, you know, it was just a lot of contact. So Bobby is a veteran champion of the Cars Tour. It was great to see him win. I want to see Bobby have success because I think he's a personality that has a great place in the series. The series has a lot of different talent and a lot of different personalities, young and old, that all play sort of this role, if you will, like you'd see in a comic book. You know what I mean? There's the villains, there's the veterans, there's the young guys coming in, there's the heroes, and everybody kind of fills these roles really, really nicely. And Bobby, I'd like to have him around for quite a few more years.
Sure.
Because of what I think he means to the series. So it's good to see him have success. And Butterbean, I called him on the phone. I was like, you know, I said what I said. I said, you know, you're a talent. You're a great asset to the series. Love everything you do. And this is going to be a battle for the championship that's going to happen. You know, you and Carson are going to race hard and be in these situations throughout the year. You have a responsibility to keep it professional. You have a responsibility on your end to try to, you know, make sure that it doesn't become physical on the racetrack or off the racetrack where it's a bad look for the series or you.
Was there any conversation? I know you were only watching it on Flow, so you may not even know the answer, but do you know if Carson and Butterbean had a conversation or was it cordial if they did?
Butterbean said it went as good as it probably could have in the moment. It was right after the race. You know, when I talked to Butterbean, I think I told him, I said, Carson passed you clean. I expected you to do a little bit more to take better care of him in that moment. I think you used him up too much. It's my opinion. Everybody might not have the same opinion. Some people might go, yeah, it's good racing, good short track racing. It was. Listen, I own the series. I love the finish. I thought if I could get that, you know, that kind of excitement
every week.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy hell, yeah.
Yeah.
We're good with it. But I just told Butterbean, I was like, you know, when a guy passes you clean on the outside on late restart, you got the fast enough car, you can get back by him. Yes, hit him a time or two, but damn, every corner till it's just – you know, till both cars are used up. But I will say, you know, and I don't know whether that'll change the way Butterbean races or not. And it might not. But I think his, you know, it just speaks to, I think, how much how much contact or how much aggression is okay. In his eyes, he thought he was doing everything he needed to do, and everything that he did was just hard racing.
Mm.
That's the way he feels, right? Carson, on the other hand, goes, that was more than hard racing for me. You know, that wasn't the way I would have, you know, expected to be raced. And so, but we'll see if the shoe's on the other foot down the road, what goes down. I think it's going to be a hell of a battle for the championship all the way through. I mean, as far as the series investor or part, you know, co-owner in the series, I'm licking my chops, man.
Yeah, absolutely, because these are two guys that, you know, I think and you probably think they have a pretty bright future. You don't know how long the Cars Tour is going to even have these guys. And for all intents and purposes, they go on to, you know, a truck ride, an Xfinity ride, something like that. Carson Kroffel is that good. We know he's that good.
I think, you know, I think Butterbean is also talented enough to get there.
I do too.
I think he's, you know, I think both of these guys could get in a truck and go run well at a, you know, at a short track somewhere or a smaller racetrack. So I'm excited to see that. I think Carson might get some opportunities here in the future. We're working hard on our end at Junior Motorsports to try to provide that for him. And I've, you know, me and Butterbean are have talked about sitting down and having lunch and talking about his, you know, what can he do? What tools does he have and what resources does he have and how can he utilize those to present opportunities to him beyond the Cars Tour? As much as I'd love for all of our drivers to stick around and race for us, race for the Cars Tour forever.
Sure.
You know, it's a tough situation to be in, man. But I'm going to tell you right now, Carson got the worst end of it. That's frustrating. I went over and saw those guys yesterday at the shop, talked to them. They're ready to regroup and get back at it. But in the end, it was a big, big night for the Cars Tour.
Yeah.
In terms of showcasing what the series is all about. My timeline was full of people going, damn, that was the best race I've seen all year. Now, I know it's a blanket statement, but, I mean, I saw that same statement multiple times. And if you haven't saw, you know, the replay or want to see some of the highlights, go on flowracing.com or Flow and on the app and check it out, the Cars Tour race at Dominion this past Saturday night. We need to talk about the second half of the NASCAR season. It kicks off in Nashville this weekend. Finally, the NBC team is back in the booth, and we had a meeting this week with all of our bosses and all of our talent, and we are gearing up and excited to get back to work. We're already starting to prepare. We had that meeting. There was a couple of notes that I took away from that meeting. When you're in the booth, you know, you kind of get in these, I don't know, I'm still young at this, so I still feel relatively new in terms of like a Rick Allen or even Letarte and Burton, who've been doing this for more years than I have. But you can kind of find yourself in a bit of a routine, you know, and that's not really that great. So we had a conversation, a big meeting this week. I'm excited about the year. It's fired me up in terms of, you know, getting creative, thinking about how you want to, you know, deliver these races to the fans at home and bringing that energy and excitement across the television. So anyways, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to get to Nashville. We've got a couple of things we're doing. Mike, we're going to have a Dale Jr. download on Friday night at 7 p.m.?
8:30 p.m.
8:30. Moved to 8:30?
Well, you thought it was 8. You're still at the track by 7.
I thought it was the top of the hour.
Yeah, I think it's 8:30 p.m.
All right.
But, yeah.
8:30, Old Red, downtown, Broadway, Nashville. Come see us. We had a full house last year. We're going to have a couple of guests, but it's an hour on stage, just kind of taking it all in, having fun. We're going to enjoy it. Yep. We're going to talk about, you know, to prepare anybody that might be there, we're going to talk about basically what's been going on in NASCAR season. I want to ask people their opinions on some of the controversies, right, that we've seen. We're going to rile the crowd up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea.
See who's going to think what. But
so come join us. That's made possible by Ally. And so we just definitely want to thank Ally for inviting us back to be part of that deal. We're looking forward to it.
Yep.
Also, can I just say, since you're bringing up NBC, next week we are going to have a conversation. I want our listeners to really listen to this because Sam Flood is your boss, executive producer and president of NBC Sports. And Kelly and I had a conversation with him yesterday for Business of Motorsports that we will air next week. And the reason why first of all, Sam doesn't do a whole lot of interviews. I haven't really seen that. But there's so many television conversations that happen, not just between you and I or whatever from the booth, but just every week, whether it's people talking about too many commercials or weather delays and how the, you know, switches to channels, or what do we expect of Peacock or streaming services moving forward. We were able to ask Sam Flood all of these questions, and I think that our listeners will find there to be a lot of fascinating things that he gives us, and we learned a lot, but that's going to drop next week. So if we're feeling good, also we talk a lot about how they prepare for the Chicago Street Course, which is going to be a huge undertaking to broadcast that, which you'll be a part of that. So look forward to that next week, Sam Flood.
All right, so we're going to get into Ask Junior real quick before we close out Dirty Air today. Ask Junior, you guys have been sending in your questions to at Xfinity Racing on Twitter, and Andrew is here to lead your questions. So let's get started, Andrew.
First question comes from Kevin. Since that famous slide job call, your debut in the booth, have you noticed yourself change as a broadcaster from then to now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can't help it. You're gonna change a little bit here and there, and I'll be different this year in some way, shape, or form. I really liked my first year. I thought it was, it was a little bit tough because I didn't know all of the rules. I didn't know how things were done in the booth, and kind of learning how to manage even the language. In broadcasting, like what your producer's telling you, there's all kinds of code words and shorthand and trying to figure out what all these things mean and what's coming at you and what they're trying to accomplish. That's gotten a lot easier. And I think you get a little more polished, whether you want to or not, over the years. And so your cadence might change just slightly. But one of the things that I think I was trying to do for a long time was play-by-play, which is Rick's job. And I love play-by-play. I love what Rick does. I love calling the battles. I love talking about two guys driving, trying to pass each other. We get to do that a little bit. But, I think I'm going to lean a little bit more into being an analyst, right? And this is why a driver chose to do that. This is why a driver was thinking in this moment. And try to work hard, prepare, spend a lot of time during the week just really trying to be on top of what I think is going to be going on. So, it's a fun job, man, but nobody's here. No, there's no playbook. There's no there's no guidelines or, hey, here's what you need to do. You got to either prepare, do the work, or you're not going to be ready and not going to have yourself all the information you need in those moments when the race is happening. Because when the race is happening, man, you got to have it all up here in your head, exactly what you need to be thinking about. It's kind of fun. I'm nervous about it, but fun. It's a fun job, and I'm looking forward to getting back in there.
Yeah, the first broadcast at Nashville this weekend. You gave us tips on what to do on Broadway last week. This next question comes from Bev. Who's your favorite country music artist?
Whoa.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah. I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. Well, for the longest time, I think Dwight Yoakam was at the top of the list. I was a big fan of his. I got to meet him at Fontana one year. He came out. And it was weird, man, because they said he was coming. I was super excited about that. Had never met him before. And when they said he was – I was in my bus with Amy and – they said he was there, so I step out of the bus, and he's got his guitar, and he starts singing Maybe I'll Be Fast as You.
Man.
And he's walking toward me, and I'm like, am I supposed to start singing? I don't know. So I did. We sang and danced a bit right there in the bus lot right before, like a couple hours before the race. It was just an interesting thing. But he's Dwight Yoakam. He can do whatever he wants, right?
Yeah.
And then we talked a bit, and he ended up playing – was it my retirement party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame party.
The Hall of Fame party, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He played my Hall of Fame party, which was so – I'd never seen him play, right? Never heard him. And he sounds awesome, man.
Amazing.
Dude, it sounded so good. Yeah. And so that was awesome. So I'd say he's right up there at the top.
That's definitely cool. Yeah. I didn't know that bus lot story. Yeah. That's funny.
I'm good friends with Tim Duggar. And I love a lot of his music. Be honest with you, man. I mean, when I first got to know Tim, I thought, you know, I was like, yeah, that's a good song. That's a good song. But probably the work that he's done in the last probably 5 years, it's as good as anything out there. And that's one of the interesting things I think about music. And I know there's a lot of people out there watching right now that know a band or a musician, and you're like, man, your stuff's good. How come you're not getting traction, right?
Right.
And I feel that way with Tim. I mean, he's with Curb, and there's he's doing a lot, and he's out there, and people know him. But I'm like, man, you know, when's that? When this song can be a top 10 song, why is it not on the charts? It's good. I like it. I mean, I would pick it over all of these songs on the top 10. So it doesn't make much sense to me, but he's a good pal. And, so I like to see him do good.
Kind of staying on theme with this. The next question's from Spencer. What kind of music did your dad listen to?
My dad listened to, he was a big Delbert McClinton fan, which I never understood that. I've listened to some of Delbert McClinton's songs, and I just didn't really love it. But Dad seemed to like it for some reason. I remember him having a record collection in the basement of the lake house when we moved in 1981. And he had, like, you know, traditional Southern Meatloaf and Southern Rock, Skinner, and all of those, you know, whatever was playing on, you know, the rock radio in the late 70s and early 80s. He had all of those albums. But he liked Brooks and Dunn a bunch. And, gosh, I'm gonna get up from this table and think, damn, I should have said that one. But he listened to that song Black Velvet. You know, they played that at the banquet for him 1 year. I believe he won the championship. Which was on traditional country radio for a while. Yeah, he listened to quite a bit of country. Faith Hill, he was a big Faith Hill fan. So I think he got to meet her. He wore a Faith Hill t-shirt one time underneath his uniform at a race that she came to.
That's cool.
Yeah, she was like singing the national anthem or something.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How do you do, you know, wearing the Faith Hill t-shirt?
No clue.
Good luck?
No clue. It was so long ago.
Oh, man. Yeah. This next question coming from Mitch. You know, this was the off week. We saw on social media a lot of the drivers were traveling to different places. Is there a go-to kind of vacation destination spot that you haven't quite been able to hit yet?
My sister was telling me Barbados is great. Mm. I like to go to new places. I want to go to Ireland. Mm. Speaking of Tim Duggar, he's been trying to get me to go to Ireland with him for a long time. He loves going there. I know that Steve Letart and his family just recently went there and really enjoyed it this past couple weeks. So Ireland's probably moving up the list for me. I'd love to go to England. I've never been. My mom's family, the G name is an English name, and I'd love to go. There's a place in England called the G Cross. It's like an intersection where the G's sort of originated from, I suppose. I need to learn more about that. But so I want to go there. I did something sort of like that with the Earnhardts in Germany.
Right, yeah.
So I kind of want to do something similar with my mother's name and where they're from. And but I mean, I love going to a tropical place, resort-ish sort of place, man. It's hard to beat that. Me and my wife went to Cabo for 4 or 5 days over the past couple of weeks. Had an incredible time. Went and I caught my first marlin. So I mean, it was it's hard to beat the beach.
Yep.
Yep.
It goes right back to that beach mountains conversation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you on Team Beach. Sorry, Mike.
Oh, we gotta go here again.
We just gotta take Mike to the right beach, and I think he'll change his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Preferably one that doesn't have a $1,000 fine attached to it. But we'll get to that. Listen to the earlier part of the podcast. You'll know what we mean by that.
Exactly. I think we got time for one more quick one. This is coming from John. What do the Monday competition meetings look like at Junior Motorsports and then even at Hendrick when you were a driver?
Well, we've got a new conference room. Kelly vacated her office and turned it into a big conference room for our meetings. It's a table with about 15 chairs, and it's full every time they have a comp meeting. The crew chiefs, drivers, shop foreman, our general manager, everybody's in there. The drivers will go over what they liked or didn't like about their cars. Crew chiefs will, have comments about some things that they might do differently or what they felt might have helped. They might break off individually into separate groups after that big meeting, and then rewatch the entire race from that track before. So I've walked into the conference room, and you'll see Josh Berry and TJ Majors, Taylor, the crew chief, watching with the engineer watching last year's race. And I'm like, golly, we never did that, right? I was sitting there and watching the old race, and all even if you'd ran well, you're just like, gosh, this was like 3 hours of the day. But they, it's helpful for them to understand what strategies might pop up. It's helpful for them not only to see how their race went the last time they ran there, but seeing how someone who won, how their race went, right? What did they do differently? And so I think it's nice to have that sort of refresh memory of what the racing is like there and where the lines were. I think when I get ready to run Bristol, you're going to go get in a sim and practice, but you're also going to watch a lot of video of qualifying, where people ran to get their fast laps and how they worked, how the track changed throughout the race, where the cars were running at certain points in the race with the traction compound or whatever might be down on the racetrack. So there's a lot for the teams and drivers to go over, depending on the racetrack. For Nashville, they're certainly going to be paying attention to lines because of the treatment to the racetrack and whatever resin might be down and how that affected qualifying, where drivers chose to race and run at certain parts of the day. So that's really important information they need to know. And I don't think the drivers would sit down and actually do that on their own if they weren't brought in and sit down with the spotters and the crew chiefs and go over that stuff together. The meetings for Hendrick Motorsports back in the day were thorough, but nothing like that. We'd sit down. Drivers would comment about what they thought their cars did, when it got better, when it got worse. The crew chiefs would remark on what they thought those changes were that the driver liked and didn't like. And one of my favorite parts of the Hendrick meetings back in the day were what we were seeing from the competition. So we'd have photographers in the garage and out on the racetrack taking pictures of the competition and seeing things on their cars that we're like, oh, look at this. It's a little trip lip. There's a little aero trick right here on this car. Look how they've got this mounted. Look how this is twisted. Look how they've chose to do this. And you'd sit in those meetings and they'd throw those pictures up on the screen and you'd try to figure it out in your mind, like, what am I looking at? Why? Where's the advantage? And you're trying to figure it out before the crew chief was going to tell you what it was, right? Before somebody was going to say, all right, this is what they're doing. And that was a lot of fun, And because then you'd get up from the meeting and go to grab your crew chief and go, are we going to do those things? Yeah. Let's do that, man. That looked cool. Let's. Are we doing it?
Yeah.
So it's funny because I was in a race at Talladega. Tony Jr. was the crew chief. I was behind Matt Kenseth. And his roof flap was opening. He's leading the race, and I'm behind him, and he's like, his roof flap was opening up, and it's knocking air off the rear spoiler. And I said to Tony Jr., I was like, hey, man, The roof flap on the 20 car in front of me is opening up, man. They got to they figured it out a way to change the pressure to where it can lift at speed. And that's knocking air off the spoiler. And he said, you ought to see yours. I was like, oh, okay. I'll just keep my mouth shut. So, I don't know. Those were fun days, man. But I don't know how much of that goes on these days because the cars are so hard to trick and twist and do anything really visual. But I'm sure there's still some conversations in those competition meetings about what the competition, what they're seeing from the competition.
Yeah. I know we talk about creativity stories. I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting one you brought up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a good place to end Ask Junior this week.
All right, y'all. I appreciate it. Ask Junior is always a lot of fun. Thank you, Andrew. Great questions by everybody sent in. We did have a great conversation about going out on the beach and some of the challenges on Father's Day. Some of our experiences that we had. We talk a little bit about the Cars Tour race at Dominion and that fantastic finish, and obviously getting ready to go to Nashville this weekend. Get back to work. Get back in the booth. I'm excited about that. I hope everybody is ready for NBC because we're excited to be able to bring the races to you. It's been a fascinating year. So many different storylines and things to talk about, and we're going to dive headfirst into it in just a few days. So we'll see you either across the airwaves or at the track somewhere throughout the rest of the season. Thank you, and I hope everybody had a great Father's Day weekend. We'll see you. Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.